At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to the OHL Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Buckeye Boggs. That man over there, well, he don't need no introduction. That's the wild man, Chris Wilds. And this is our Oregon 2024 preview, Chris. We've done USC, UCLA, Washington. There's one more West Coast school. And can we say we saved the best for last?
No.
West Coast schools, if you're going to judge them, who's better than Oregon? USC?
No. Now, Oregon is the best of the ones we brought in from the West Coast.
Yep. I agree. So, anyways, let's go ahead, Chris, real fast, and take a look at Oregon historically and how they did last year before we go to our guest interview from the Quack 12 podcast and Adam from the Quack 12 podcast. And then we'll come back and we'll break down the rest of the, how we think the season's going to go for the Ducks. So here we go. Last year in 2023, Chris, they started the season off with an 81-7 shellacking of Portland State, 38-30 win over Texas Tech, a 55-10 win over Hawaii. Then in the game of the year up to that point, an undefeated Colorado came to the house, to their house. And that's when we find out that Deion was not ready for prime time with this team. Oregon absolutely wiped the field with them, 42-6. Then they went on the road for the first time. They beat a hapless Stanford team, 42-6. Got a bye before their first of two losses to the Huskies last year, both of which were by 3 points, 36-33, in a game, Chris, that you and I watched on your phone on the way back
yes.
from West Lafayette, Indiana. Washington State 38-24 win. Utah, actually, this is an impressive win. This might be their most impressive win in last season, in my opinion. On the road at Utah, beat them 35-6.
Yeah.
Cal was absolutely no challenge, 63-19. USC kept it within 10, 36-27. Arizona State, 49-13. Oregon State, 31-7. That the Beavers might be able to hold it a little closer, but alas, they did not. That got them to the Pac-12 championship game in a rematch against the Huskies. And again, a 3-point loss, 34-31. They got the group of five sacrificial lamb in the bowl game. They beat up on Liberty 45-6. And that's how they ended up with a 12-2 record last year. 8-2 overall in the final season of what will be the Pac-12. Dan Lanning is now entering his third season as head coach for the Ducks. He has a record of 22-5 over the course of those first two seasons. Of course, they play in Eugene, Oregon at Autzen Stadium, which has a capacity of only 54,000, Chris. It's probably the biggest little stadium in college football.
Absolutely.
All-time record, 705 wins to 511 losses, 46 ties in their school's history, a 17-20 bowl record overall, and 14 conference championships. Chris, your thoughts on the history and how the season went last year for Dan Lanning and the Ducks?
Yeah, you know, Oregon, I would say since Chip Kelly was there, has been a formidable team. For the most part, they are in the conversation, it seems like, almost every year. They were a great addition to the Big 12, or the Big 10 from the Pac-12. Probably the best addition to the Big 10 from the Pac-12. And, you know, I feel like they are a very good team again this year. You know, they are a very tough place to play. You called them the biggest little stadium in college football, and that's very true. They are a very loud, very raucous, very, you know, very favorable home environment for the Ducks. What I will say about last season is they had a great season last season, but those two losses to Washington, man, that's got to sting. Imagine how it'll lose, how it'll be if they lose three times to the same team this year.
Well, they've lost three times in a row to that team up north from them.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar. Adam, we get into that in a little bit. I tell you what, let's go ahead and bring Adam on from the Quack 12 podcast. I had a ball with this guy. This is one of the coolest dudes in the college huddle. And
they have a great podcast.
They do. It is.
They really do.
It is very unique. I think a lot of people would love that podcast. So check that out. Anyways, we're going to bring Adam on. And then after that, we're going to come back, Chris, and we're going to wrap this thing up.
Okay.
And welcome back to the OHL podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Buckeye Boggs. And joining me right now is our special guest from the Quack 12 podcast, Adam. Adam, thanks for joining us this afternoon, man.
Hey, I'm stoked, man. I'm learning more about the Big Ten. It's still so much new information. Still seems crazy that we're even in this situation, but yeah. Also pretty excited to be here with, like, you know, some true blue bloods in college football. It feels pretty crazy. And, you know, like Rutgers. Yeah.
Well, hey, don't sleep on Rutgers this year, man. Don't sleep on them.
I feel like every person we've been talking to, other people who have been doing Big Ten interviews and stuff, I think we're all on the same page. Rutgers is really maybe actually able to do something this year.
Yeah.
Rutgers. Everything's lining up. Super yeah, well
the,
for them.
The schedule, the roster, yeah, everything's lining up for them. you know what else is lining up is a big date for Ohio State to go out to Eugene, Oregon. This is by far outside of the last game we play in the month of November in Columbus, Ohio, which will go unmentioned at this time on this podcast. this game going out to Eugene, Oregon is fantastic. Now, I don't have tickets. But last time when COVID hit, I was going out to Eugene. My wife and I were coming out to Oregon, and then COVID hit and it didn't happen. And then the next year, you guys came into the shoe and I was there and I left upset because yeah. we couldn't stop one run to the left side of our defense. Everything. and by the way, Joe Moorhead coaches Akron now, who was the offensive coordinator for that game. And yeah. I've already yelled and determined that Akron will not cross the 50-yard line in that. That's not going to happen. I want to see Joe Moorhead fired. But anyways, Oregon is the most – I've heard multiple people say this. Oregon is the most similar team joining the Big Ten to Ohio State out of the four new teams. Agree or disagree?
I would definitely agree on that. I mean, there is a bit of a difference where it's like Ohio State still very much, I think just about every Oregon fan would say this. If we're just talking college football, Ohio State has always been a step ahead throughout our 100-plus year history. Like, you can really chart Oregon getting closer and closer to like Ohio State's level through those the first nine times we played, nine straight losses, and many of them in Rose Bowls, many of them big games. Like, they all really bookmark big times in Oregon history where it's like, were they ready to step up? No, the answer was no. And so I think there is that difference. However, there are so many similar things going on here. I mean, innovative offenses as of late, Oregon has been recruiting on Ohio State's level as well. With our most hated rival, Washington, we definitely think of them as like snooty, you know, like bigger city, and we're like the ho-dunk thing. I think with the mission, I mean, and even like our rival has a W, your rival has an M. We both have the O's. We're both chanting O's in the stadium. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would say there's very similar vibes there. And also that there's not a whole bunch of I don't think Duck fans necessarily hate Ohio State, because obviously, like, some terrible memories, like losing to you in the national championship, obviously. But it's always felt more like hopefully like a bar that we could get to a little bit more. I don't think there's too much hatred for Ohio State, so I could imagine that. But I'm sure there's some Duck fans that are ready to rant online about
that. Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's more of like a competitive banter, more so than like just a rivalry. However, we will address this by the end of this interview, how that this could definitely become a new rivalry. And you know, that last win that I referenced felt very much like a comeuppance by Oregon. Like, we're here now. It felt that way in Columbus.
We've even I've talked about this. It was like after the win, but like far enough away where it was like our emotions were kind of, you know, a little lower. We were talking about that. I believe if you take out postseason games, that was probably Oregon's biggest regular season win in its entire history. We really were looking at it, trying to be like where the stakes were as big, you know, where the game of college football is near the size where it is now, and like what it means, where they were both ranked. That probably was like one of Oregon's biggest wins. And it was with a quarterback that now a lot of Duck fans make fun of, Anthony Brown, and also a coach that now a lot of Duck fans make fun of, Mario Cristobal. First of all, but it's still, like, I always have a little soft spot in my heart for those guys just because, they got us a Rose Bowl win and we beat Ohio State, which is something we had never done. It was pretty dang. And the horseshoe, that's what felt really crazy. And Kayvon Thibodeau wasn't there. Like, it felt truly, truly crazy.
I mean, when we learned he wasn't playing, I was like, it's over. And I was like, no, it's not. And of course, that was a foreshadowing of that season and really that entire couple years of having a defensive coordinator that was just inept. And as we went through the season, that became evident. I mean, he got yanked from calling the defense and it was,
we pulled a total like Pac-12 move. We lost to Stanford like a couple weeks later.
So the similarities and the short but yet dramatic history between these two schools very much feels like when you look at who's coming in, and of course Ohio State only gets to play one of the new four West Coast teams, and of course it's Oregon. It just makes sense, right? However, when I did have the Washington podcast on here, they did also compare themselves, they said, to Michigan Light, and I was like, this makes perfect sense why Oregon hates you then. You snooty boys. You know, it's like, my gosh.
It's a tale as old as time, right?
Right.
Like that kind of dynamic. And then we're the snooty ones to Oregon State, though obviously Oregon State has like justified reasons to hate us now than ever. But we don't need to talk about them, though, because they didn't make the cut. So it's all right.
They didn't. And although I will give the belligerent Beavers podcast some flowers, they are still waving that Pac-12 flag, man. They had a Pac-12 media day with Justin and Washington.
Oh, so cool.
And I was like, you guys are just you know what? Own it, man. Absolutely. They're, you know, what comes around goes around. Eventually, they're going to get their opportunities again in what will probably be the Big Ten West at some point.
It'll be something stupid. But but literally, I think a lot of Duck fans feel this way, is this whole situation with the like destruction of the Pac-12. Like, I know like Pac-12 has not been like a true national power for the last, you know, decade or so, minus some like occasional like, you know, Oregon's or Stanford or Washington, stuff like that. But this, you really got it. Like, there's a lot of true diehard fans who grew up with this conference's you know, very old 100-plus-year conference, it does feel really, like, sad. Like, there's a bit of true, like, grief in the death of it. And so combining that with, you know, oh, but we're making, hopefully making more money, bigger stage, it does feel like Duck fans sold our soul to the devil, you know. And I will totally back, like, Wazoo and Oregon State, that's the real college football there. Like, those fans and, like, what they're doing, I mean, they got totally screwed over, but, like I, if I wasn't a Duck fan, I would be so down for rooting for the Pack too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody's waving their flags, man. Everybody's like, hey, come on, man. Mm. I mean, if one of them goes undefeated, which I don't see it happening, but if one of them were to go to undefeated, can you imagine if Washington
if they beat us? That'd be so – I would half be like – obviously, I'd be devastated and furious because there's no reason why that should happen this season. But if they – if Oregon State beat us, it'd also kind of be like, yeah, we deserve this. And this is going to be a legendary run, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's dive into a little bit more of the traditional. We'll jump back off that track again at the end of this interview. But what are the main storylines out there in Eugene, Oregon, as you guys prepare for the 2024 season?
The main storylines is, yes, we've been to two national championships. And yes, we've knocked on the door a couple of times, you know, with like Joey Harrington or like that Dennis Dixon, like tragic season or, you know, like way back in the day or whatever. But this feels like the time where we're not really doing it through not a gimmicky offense, you know, a cutting offense that like gives you kind of more bang for your buck out of like lower recruits and feel sometimes like you're getting lucky. And if one injury happens, you're like done for, like under the Chip Kelly era, or like Mark Helfrich and stuff like that. This feels like finally we got a full whole blue chip ratio thing. Like I think it's like 75% of the roster or something like that. I think I read like, and it's just like clear from top to bottom, like actual talent that realistically you're going to need to compete in the national championship, to compete against the best teams. And not only that, but now we've got even more games if you're going to get there with the playoffs. So you're going to have the depth. This looks like the Oregon's first roster. It's definitely their best roster in their history if we're just talking about ratings and such. This is their first roster that looks like, yes, this is a true contender. And this is coming off, you know, a couple of years where Georgia dismantled us. You know, I mean, granted, it's Dan Lanning's first game, Bo Nix's first game as a Duck, like a million reasons why, and Georgia was Georgia. But it looks like possibly this is a team that on paper, should be able to compete against everybody. And it's not that kind of building where I think Mario Cristobal, I do think sometimes he kind of chases the stars. Like, he's always good at building the line, but I think there was a lot more misses under Cristobal than there appears to be under Dan Lanning. We're still super early in his, like, coaching, like, life and his career at Oregon, but it appears to be, like, the roster management is the most impressive thing in the Lanning era as of right now. Like, nice. I truly believe, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I do think that there's definitely some potential for Lanning to come in and really ruffle some feathers in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. He's already doing it in recruiting. Yeah. I mean, you guys came into the state of Ohio and took a boy.
You know, that's right.
Came right in and said, whoop, we're going to take him, and we're probably going to take the guy from Northeast Ohio too, which never happens, by the way. Talking about McNutt, five-star recruiter. Yeah. Whose dad?
That's after you guys got Carlos Lachlan from us, so we thought, okay, well, yeah, we're going to lose a little bit of recruiting power here, but yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
So, piggybacking on that with that storyline, the storyline here is the NIL and Phil Knight in Oregon. Mm-hmm. For the fans who believe that Oregon is just paying for a roster. Of course, Ohio State's doing pretty much a similar thing as well. Not that we have an endless pit of money to give to NIL. Of course, ESPN writes the article that's apparently the situation in Eugene, Oregon, is an endless amount of money. What's the truth, Adam? Is obviously NIL is a part of this, but how much of it is NIL?
You know, like, I only know so much. First of all, I want to show this show how bought and sold Duck fans are right now. I'm going to show this statue of Phil Knight, little bobblehead that I have on my desk at all times, like a little deity that I worship. I'll tell you, well, first of all, like, any Duck fan who's like, oh, it's absolutely not about the NIL money, I do not know what they are smoking, because clearly this has never happened in Oregon. When Chip Kelly was doing his thing and Scott Frost was at Oregon being our OC, he straight up like went to the media. It was like, you just can't recruit kids to Eugene. Like, said that out loud. And, you know, I love Eugene, Oregon. I think it's a beautiful city. But let's be real. The reason why at this moment we're competing against Georgia and Ohio State and like Alabama and like the true like teams, I never thought if we flipped one recruit from them, it was like the offseason story for the Oregon Ducks, for our fan base. So to see this complete 180 of just like a flood of real talent, it's clearly the NIL. Now, I think people are also being disingenuous if you're being like, Oregon has the biggest checkbook, full stop. Because I don't believe we do. I don't really have numbers to throw out. You know, I've seen charts online, but I'm like, I haven't checked the accuracy of that chart, so I'm not going to quote that. But I do know that it's just clear that like teams like a Texas and Alabama, Ohio State, we all got a lot of money. And at a certain point, having, you know, an extra $6-8 million when you already have X amount of million, like, you're gonna need to do more to kind of distinguish yourself from all these other ones. And I think what we're really seeing is that what's helping us is not just Nike's money, but Nike's organizational skills. Because for those that don't know, like, Phil Knight went to the University of Oregon, you know, back in like the pre-Fontaine legendary runner of the 70s. Right. They made two biopics about him. Back in those track days, we are called Tracktown USA. And then Bill Bowerman and Phil Knight, like, they make Nike. And then Phil Knight gets even more into football in like the 90s and 2000s and goes like, how much money would it take to win a national championship? He's now 80 whatever. And is fully being like, I want to pay X amount of money for my team to win one national championship before I die. And not only are we getting so much money, we're getting the organization of probably the best example of how to pay talent and to, you know, sponsorships for athletes. So the second the NIL thing happened, we were fully ready to go above board. And a lot of these rich teams, you are hearing these stories of like, oh, this player is going here. But at the last second, the amount that they kind of, you know, like shook on doesn't play. I think Oregon, it is always like, nope, here's your check. Bing, bang, boom. It clears. Like, I think it's just a really well-developed NIL machine. Plus, Dan Lanning just turned down Alabama.
Right.
He's a young coach getting, like, every single season you're seeing, like, just ridiculous offense. In theory, his defense is trying to be what Georgia's would be. They look like a true national contender. And, you know, like, I think that's enough for a bunch of talent. But, I mean, we're fooling ourselves if you're not talking about the NIL, you know.
Yeah.
It is real.
It's like you said, checks that aren't bouncing coupled with momentum.
Yeah.
And you know, that has a lot to do with it, you know. I mean, look at what happened in Ann Arbor. I mean, gosh, coach leaves, half the coaching staff leaves, and they've become three-star universities. So
and like Texas A&M, it's like Texas A&M had a lot of theoretical talent but was run like crap under Jimbo and was disorganized and like had old ways of thinking, and so then it expressed. And like, if we suck it up out there, the money's going to mean less and less every year, you know?
Yep. So let's talk about the roster a little bit, Adam, because I know like there were some losses, and but it seems like every loss was replaced with like either someone just as good or better through the transfer portal and yeah. or just experience coming up who's now ready to roll. As we've been doing our position group previews, it has become very clear and evident to us here at the OHIO podcast mm-hmm. that the two best rosters are Ohio State and Oregon. It's not even close. Every week when we do a position group, there's either one, two, or three Buckeyes and Ducks on in the top 10 at every position. Mm-hmm. And that's taking into account us doing several things, looking at everybody's top 10 rankings, looking at film, looking at stats, and then just projecting a little bit on our part. And so that being said, I don't know if you want to start with offense or defense first, but feel free to just dive into your roster a little bit, talk a little bit about some names people need to know, and what maybe some positions you lost and who you replaced them with.
Yeah, let's just start with the offense. I mean, it's almost so easy that I shouldn't even bring up, like, Dylan Gabriel, like, Heisman favorite now. But I think that one reason why it's like Oregon fans are just so insanely stoked right now is that not like this is the kind of thing we've never seen before where it's like, oh, if we have one good quarterback, our backup is like, you know, maybe he's a good guy, maybe he's a hard worker or was a former walk-on, but he's not going to be someone you're as excited about the starter. Like, that's true elite level recruiting that you don't see. Worst, like Dante Moore, who statistically didn't look great at UCLA, but Chip Kelly, like, I think he's an offensive, like, mastermind still. I think he's still going to do pretty dang good things at Ohio State. But running that team as a coach, he was doing some bonkers things. Like, he was not running that roster very well. He was not bringing up Dante Moore as a freshman QB very well at all. But I think this guy's elite talent. And like, I think there's such a good vibe right now. Again, the NIL helps that I think there's going to be some great Dante Moore highlights in this season just because we'll get some big leads and then it'll be like, oh, this guy looks like he's a legit starter as well. Jordan James, the running back, and this is me also talking about the offensive line, obviously.
Sure.
Because the offensive line is, we all know this, the most important thing in all of football.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's truly, like, the be-all, end-all. And maybe the thing that was keeping Oregon back, you know, like, 10, 15 years ago was, like, we had great offensive lines for what we were trying to do. But when you're actually recruiting, like, the elite talent, it's something else. And so behind what we believe will hopefully be a very sure offensive line, we've got Jordan James, who we loved Bucky Irving. Bucky Irving is a loss, obviously. But Jordan James near the end of the season, he was just looking possibly even better. Like, he was really stepping up, really strong runner, like just upright, just plowing through. We're feeling really good about him. Noah Whittington, who was injured for like all last season, was also a really good pass catcher, really elite speed. Like, it was supposed to be Bucky Irving 1A, Noah Whittington 1B. And supposedly Whittington is back and ready to go. And in Will Stein's offense, those positions can really, like, feast. And so we're stoked about that. Like, big losses, I would say, like, obviously when you're losing, like, Jaxson Powers-Johnson to the NFL. Like, fortunately, this is a good spot to be in. A lot of our big losses are to the NFL. Like, that's a sign of a healthy program, right?
Right, that's how you, right.
That's one reason why people are hopefully choosing your NIL money over someone else's NIL money is that that's the end game, right? They don't want just the paycheck now. They want the future paycheck. So losing those guys is obviously rough, but I'm feeling pretty dang confident in the line that we have now and that they've properly you know, orchestrated so it's like there's not three transfers coming in or four transfers coming in as starters, because that can really be like a death note. Like Josh Connerly Jr. looks like someone who's willing, who's ready to replace that NFL talent. And like a Johnny Cornelius, he transferred in last season, but looks like he's ready. Like we're hoping that he's ready. So on the offense, and like even like Troy Franklin, we're losing him, getting NFL talent, but this is the best receiver room, which I think every Duck fan will agree with me on this. Even in our best classes, like we've always been a bit weak at receiver. Like a list of the top 10 best receivers, a lot of not Duck fan for Ducks, a lot of non-Duck fans won't know a lot of those names, I'd say. And like when we played you in the national championship, you know, two of our receiver, our top receivers get out, one for like getting busted for weed, one being injured, and the offense was significantly hindered. Like this is an offense that's got so, like Trayshon Holden, who we believe was a victim of the bad management at Texas A&M. We believe that he is as elite as promised. He looks so good right now. I don't think there'll be a misstep there from Troy Franklin. And Tez Johnson, like he was there before. Obviously, he's Bo Nix's brother and could have gone for the draft. I mean, there was some pretty dang good receivers that went to the draft, most of them from Washington. But Tez Johnson, like he just broke the record for most receptions in a single season for us. Apparently, he's working really well with Dylan Gabriel. So on that note, like, I don't think there's many losses on the offense. And then on the defense, I like Ben Roberts, who went over to Michigan State. Like, it's funny. They kind of we switched nose tackles. Mm-hmm. Like, we got Derek Harmon, who looked good to us and is highly rated in the transfer portal, because once Jonathan Smith goes over there, he doesn't want to be there anymore. He transfers to us, and that news, it appears, like, Ben Roberts is like, okay, well, there's a spot there, so I'm going over there. I would have been nice to have him for depth, but it felt like he was kind of orchestrated again, because we also got like Jamari Caldwell from Houston, who was not known before the beginning of last season, but now is like a lot of people are hyping him up. Just way more, way more speed than you would expect from his kind of size, and he could be like playing a nose tackle, but it seems like he's really going to be a little further on the end, and like they're going to try to use him for attacking a lot more. As far as edge, that's probably where I'm most excited, because having Kayvon Thibodeau, that's not exactly a thing that we were used to before him, and having him for that run was like, oh my god, like elite rushing is some thrilling football. Like that can make your defense, I mean, obviously, right? That's why they're drafted so high and such. It can be thrilling to watch, a complete game changer. We got Mateo Uiagalelei, who looked pretty dang good last season, and I think he's going to be able to step up. Elijah Rushing's a freshman that's, again, like recruiting at levels we haven't seen. So it's like, he's a freshman, but he's probably not quite big enough right now, but who knows? Even like we got a coach's son, like Tatum Tuioti. So he's been living in Eugene and stuff like that. I think he's going to like ruin some days, especially early on, our first three kind of gimme games of like Idaho, Boise State, Oregon State. Like, I think there's going to be some good number stacking there. And not to be a bummer, but if we're talking about truly kind of the worst losses in a lot of different ways, obviously. But so I think our defensive line or like front seven, we're doing like a mint front. I think that is going to be pretty dang solid, because the amount that we're returning and the talent that we have, and it just looks pretty solid. Really, where we were getting our losses last season, not against everybody, like you had to be able to throw against us, you know, like you had to have an elite pass offense. But the two times we went against an elite pass offense, Washington, which was a hell of an offense, but yeah. I mean, we lost both those games. And if we're talking about the goal for Oregon is to get a national championship, we are going to be playing against teams eventually with elite talent in some regard. Like, obviously, if a great QB throws a perfect pass to a great receiver, there's only so much you could do about that sometimes. But our secondary was a weakness, and depth in our secondary was a huge weakness. You know, it was like the reason why we didn't make the playoffs. And Kyrie Jackson, he went to the NFL and then gets drafted, and then he tragically dies in a DUI accident. He wasn't drinking. It was someone else, you know, being a jerk. And so obviously that's a huge loss for the team morale-wise, but also just that depth that, you know, if he would have returned, stayed or something like that, that is probably like our weakest spot right now. The wonderful thing is, like, I don't even care if we bench this kid and he never plays. The fact that we flipped or got Jabbar Muhammad from Washington, who he was a pretty dang good cornerback. Like,
yeah,
he had some good highlights on us. To get him to come to Oregon is just such an extra level. I don't know if you have any, like, players that were Michigan Wolverines. That are there some good famous ones? Or?
There's a whole family, actually.
Nice. Yeah, traitorous family. I love it.
Yeah, so that happened. Of course, lately we've lost our running back coach who went to the Ann Arbor. That's why we went to Eugene to grab yours, because we lost ours to Michigan. And then, and then we had a staffer leave. But player-wise, gosh, I don't – I mean, maybe if I think hard enough, but we did the Bourne family came down from up there, and then they all stayed here. And, yeah,
it's great. That's what football's about, you know.
Well, you know, and you know, you bring that up because, you know, we just did our cornerbacks, and he was in one of them in our top 10. And of course, you know, I'm like, yeah, the best guy at Washington goes to Eugene, of course, right? Like, So, anyways, So what I'm hearing you say is the secondary is the weakness of this football team.
I think I would say that. And, like, I think luckily you can tell, like, okay, here are some attempts that Dan Lanning has taken to, like, not only shore up things right now, but hopefully, like, transition where it's like we're getting players who've got, like, a year left.
Right.
Like, you know, like Jabbar Muhammad, I believe. I forget.
Yeah.
Or a Cam Alexander. And these should be really good transitional players where we're not running anyone off scholarship. But the goal, I think, is the goal in elite recruiting is what Georgia did like a couple years ago, where you're recruiting at a level where you're like, okay, we'll take one, maybe two. Maybe zero transfers because, you know, you just like I'm sure Ohio State has gotten into that true level at some point in their historic like run. But Oregon has never even thought about like there's no reason why we would have ever thought to get at that level. It's clear Dan Lanning is like attempting to do that, attempting not to be too reliant on the transfer portal. Just pick and choose the absolute best ones that you think you can get. And I think he's done that well. Like if Jaleel Florence, who I've always thought was pretty dang good at cornerback, he just got injured like during that first Washington game. Mm-hmm. And it stunk because it was just and so there was one cornerback against an elite passing offense gone before the half, I do believe. And but he should be good to go. I think he was not playing in the spring game, but I think that's just out of extreme caution.
Sure.
Tysheem Johnson looked pretty dang good. He transferred from like Mississippi, and I thought he was pretty solid. And the one we're really excited about, again, these are like a lot of transfers are probably going to be starting. But if you want to start transfers further away from the ball, like this is typically a better place to put them. Brandon Johnson from Duke is really dang good and has the kind of speed where it's like he can make up the speed so he can get away with a little bit of extra stuff. So we are like, you know, rolling the dice in secondary, but we're rolling the dice with hopefully loaded dice and we need, you know, just some of this talent to roll off. And then behind them are talented freshmen that we've been recruiting. Like,
sure.
Hopefully it works out, but that's probably where I would circle if things go belly up in the season. All right.
So if the secondary is the concern, what's the definite strength of Oregon's team?
The definite strength of Oregon's team, I think it's fine to say straight up offense. I just don't.
The whole offense, baby.
The whole damn offense should be insane. I think you're going to have to keep up with Oregon. If we're getting maybe a little bit more, you know, precise than that, I guess it's like, I think this offensive line, you know, because catastrophic, knock on wood right now, things could always happen. We had some really good offensive line luck last season. So, again, knock on wood, maybe we're due or something. But if this unit stays healthy, I really like the idea that Dylan Gabriel, for like the first time in his career, can have true time. Because he's not like the strongest passer in the world. But like one of my co-hosts, Hithloday, says, like, he can hit the deep pass. He just has kind of got to charge up for it. Like, it takes a little extra time, you know. But he can hit it with, like, accuracy, and he can hit it deep. And more, he's managing the game at an elite level and doing what you need, which is what Bo Nix did to almost winning a Heisman level. You know, like, completely changing his story. It's mainly because, oh, he added an offensive line and, like, play calls that were not asking him to save the game at all times. It was asking him, like, look who's open, distribute to them, you know, like, right, like follow what the RPO is telling you to do. And I think Dylan Gabriel will be able to step behind that because of the offensive line. So I think that's the ultimate strength right now. And I hope it stays true.
Let's take a look at your schedule here real quick and determine what your expectations are, as well as the ceiling and floor for the Ducks. And then we'll finish up with some fun questions. Cool. So you brought in those first three, Idaho, Boise State, Oregon State. Those should be auto dubs. Bye week. Go down to L.A. to take on the Bruins. Host Michigan State before October 12th. It's the big one. It's the Ducks and Bucks. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. At Purdue, I'm just going to let you know straight up, that one might be trickier than you think.
People have been – that's like some Big Ten knowledge, because people seem to find that out a little bit.
If that – and I think that's a Friday night game too. Mm. So it's going to be rowdy. West Lafayette at night is a different animal than during the day. It just is. We've gone into a West Lafayette multiple times undefeated and left there with a loss going – how in the world did we just lose to a bunch of people who play with toy trains?
Like, those were probably the only Ohio State game I watched that season. I probably heard that you were losing, and I'm like, oh, I got to change it.
So just keep your eye on that one. Okay. The Boiler Express podcast guys, they'll tell you straight up that West Lafayette at night is a different animal. Against Illinois, they're going to want to make that a rock'em sock'em, let's try to play this in the phone booth. You spread them out, they won't be able to keep up with you. At Michigan. Now,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
I'm not going to be rooting for Ducks a lot of games, but you can trust me. We will be rooting for you in this game.
Nice.
Because how it goes here in Columbus, Ohio, is Ohio State's number one, and whoever's playing that team is number two in our book.
Word.
So
nice.
So that's how it goes for us. Probably same for you guys with Washington.
I'll buy an Ohio State hat for when you play Washington.
There you go.
Wear it. Like, yeah, absolutely.
We'll be sure to send you one. We can send you one of these bad boys.
Ooh, I would love that. That's
there you go. So that game is going to be super interesting. Now, on the road, in the big house, and then Maryland, which they're terrible, at Wisconsin, jump around, again, late in the year. Wisconsin is one of those teams, like, they're always really solid, and they always have good offensive line play. And if you don't bring your A game, you're going to be in a dogfight. Like, that's how Wisconsin is. I don't know if there was anybody in the Pac-12 that was kind of similar to that. Like, Stanford during their heyday, maybe?
Yeah, Stanford during their heyday, sure. Utah is always kind of like that. Where it's
there,
like,
that's a great comparison, actually, yeah. Utah.
Kyle Whittingham wants to be that, too, and, like, is that. And,
yeah, that's a great – they even look alike with their uniform.
Oh, yeah.
And then another bye late in the week, and then the rivalry game against Washington. So, looking at that roster, we'll talk about Ohio State, Oregon here after this, but looking at that roster, I want you to be dead honest with me. What do you think is – or that roster, but schedule. Mm. What do you think is the floor – and ceiling for the Ducks in 2024 in those 12 games?
So the floor, you know, let's say there's some, like, injuries or just, like, things are out of whack with maybe both quarterbacks again, like, takes a little time or something like that. Like, there's obvious ones where it's like, look, these rosters are so talented that, yeah, they could beat you. Like, obviously, Ohio State could beat us. Michigan in Ann Arbor, coming off a national title, even with those losses, could beat us. I mean, Dan Lanning, one thing that people do make fun of him for is, like, he's lost to our rival. Like, he's lost to Washington all three times we've played him. All have been pretty dang close games, but yeah, all three times. We lost to the Beavers once in, like, humiliating fashion, and where they ran on us like 18 times or something. So, like, he's lost some boneheaded games, and some of those were because he's young, he is very aggressive on offense. Like, we'll be on, like, our own 38-yard line and, like, screw it, we're going for it on fourth down. Like, we can do it, we're better. Like, he is aggressive. He very much is like, most points win. That's all that matters, you know. So he can, you know, he can blow a game like that easily. Even I think if we're talking worst case scenario, I will not entertain that we're losing to Washington this year. I just can't. I'm not going to say the apocalypse has happened this year, and that's what that would happen. It would happen if that happened. So I'm not going to even entertain that idea with the amount of loss they have and the amount of hate Dan Lanning must have for them right now. But against Wisconsin, I think, you know, even if it's like, you know, the roster isn't quite where ours is, it's in Madison, Wisconsin. It's November 16th. Oregon, like, how much does it matter? Maybe it matters a little less than some say, but, like, we have not played many cold games like that, like traveling to what could be, you know, a snowy field or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of Oregon history really doing that, not regularly, like a lot of this conference has. Those are, like, the three that I'll really entertain losing to, or maybe, you know, we would beat one of them and then some random other loss. But, like, so I think, like, 9-3 better be the floor, because for this roster, we should even be able to take injuries at almost any level. And even if our secondary ends up being like, yeah, it's definitely the weakness of the team, we're coming from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, where it's like Big Ten has that mentality. It's seemingly so many teams where they're like, even if we can't pull it off, and even if we don't have the roster for it, and we shouldn't, we're going to be like big boy football and try to run the ball into, you know, just the history of it all. West Coast is like, even if we can't pull it off, even if it's going to hurt us, we're going to throw the ball. We're going to be high scoring offense, typically, you know, not all of them, but definitely the general men. You run into that a lot more. Mm-hmm. And like for bad or worse there. And so I just think like we're going to get challenged overall less in our secondary than we did like the last 2-3 seasons. Not from like the big boys in the Big Ten, but I think against most teams, it's like I feel very confident. You know, Dan Lanning's defense is far from where he wants it to be, like Georgia's, but I feel confident in his ability to stop the run. He's pretty dang good at that every single season he's been here, the two. And so I think some Big Ten teams are going to be like, when we don't have that option as much, our offense becomes actually pretty dang limited. So I think 9-3 is the floor. I mean, with the hype that we're talking here, with the possibilities, sure, if we got lucky, we win every dang game and we win the national championship. It's our first national championship.
Yeah, I don't think that it's. I don't think 12-0 is stretch for saying that's the ceiling. Like I said, the roster sets that up for you. Mm-hmm. I have a theory about West Coast teams that I'm going to run by you real fast about the four West Coast teams joining. And again, this probably doesn't apply to you guys as much as it does to the other three, but particularly in USC. Mm-hmm. And this is my theory. If you play a West Coast team, you want to get them later in the schedule. And here's why. Number one, you brought up the physicality of the Big Ten, and it's a real thing. If you play three Big Ten teams in a row, let's say Nebraska, Purdue, and Illinois, and you think we're better than all three of them, right? But by the end of those three, you are so beat up that you're like, you just physically are, that whole week of practice, you ain't practicing because you're just so physically beat up. And then on top of that, with the travel involved now, that by the end of the season, I believe Washington, I think UCLA is going to be in for a bad year all around, but mm-hmm. Washington, UCLA, and USC by the end of the season are going to be so beat up and tired that they're not going to be like they were at the beginning of the year. Like if you play USC at the beginning of the year, I think they're going to be much better than they are at the end of the year, just because of the travel and the physicality of play. They're going to be beat up. But
I think so. I very much think so. And again, specifically for USC, because like at least UCLA and Washington have the excuse of like, we just lost our coach and we lost a lot of our players. Like that's, you know, a legit excuse. Depth gets a lot harder at that point. And the travel is why I think Oregon probably will lose at least one game, just because it's like, what an ask. All of a sudden we got to, like, you know, so many crazy road games, which would have been like one a season you travel to Madison, Wisconsin. No, yeah. But USC is like, there's no excuse. Lincoln Riley should have both those lines so much more just ready to go. But like even the offensive line, like, yeah, they're returning starters, but I don't think they're like good starters, honestly. And again, in the defense, he's just kind of punted, which is kind of what he always has done. I kind of think Lincoln Riley is going to, I think he's going to be at USC like for a while. But I think more and more the shine is going to come off of Lincoln Riley when it's like, it seems like the general momentum for college football is kind of going a little bit more backwards. It's like, obviously, you got to have elite offense. You got to score more points. Like, it's kind of the same, like, quick crazy fast offense is going to be the name of the game. But you got to have elite defense, too. Like, it seems like the defenses are catching up. The pendulum is swinging. And that leaves someone like Lincoln Riley, who's just not recruiting very well on that whole side of the ball, that by the even if his offense gets, like, really lucky with injury luck, by the time late in their schedule, I think their defense may be like shambles, and so they're losing games that they shouldn't to like Maryland, like 48-41, because that's kind of what they've been doing. They almost lost to Colorado, and Colorado was like absolutely garbage. And like, yeah, I think USC's in like time for a rude awakening pretty soon. Yeah.
Like there's a part of me that thinks that like Rutgers walks into the Coliseum and just knocks their block off and they're shocked.
I need to buy a dang ticket.
Like
to that
people
game
are right just now. Like, and it's a Friday night game too. And so it's late, you know, and
people
they just
don't show up to the Coliseum. Their fans don't show up either.
Yeah. So. And so like Rutgers walks in there and it's like their Super Bowl and they're 5-1, 6-1 on the season. And they're playing for potentially maybe college football playoff berth. And USC is just like, it's Rutgers. And then all of a sudden they're down four scores. Like, there's a world where that exists. And
they may quit on the team because, you know, they have three losses before they get to that point. And one thing I'm so stoked about, because I have seen the Big Ten fans travel. And it is like, y'all do it. It's crazy. I saw when Nebraska came to Eugene, I was like, they lived up to the hype of what you think of with Nebraska fans. Something I'm so stoked about is like, I finally get to see the Rose Bowl full of people. That's when it's not the Rose Bowl. Cause it's just like, it's just like atrocious that you get, you know, it's history there. Like, obviously I'm talking to the only other groups of people that are like, the Rose Bowl is sacred. Keep all these other conferences out of this damn thing. And but it'll be so nice to see Nebraska fill that thing like 90% or Ohio State fans just like flood it. Because they'll be like, maybe it'll be like Rutgers fans flooding it because they're like, well, who knows when we're going to play at the Rose Bowl again, you know? Right,
exactly. No, you know, that's a good point. So I ran this by you when you guys had me on the preview Ohio State preview weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've come up with these new rivalry games and trophies. And, of course, you know what I'm going, where I'm going with this one with you and I. But so UCLA and Purdue I'm going to make them rivals now. They're called the Golden Spike. They're both basketball schools. They both have gold in their color. And, of course, Purdue's a big train school. And the Golden Spike was the spike that they drove in the train tracks when they connected east to west all those years ago. And
I like that.
Yeah, so they have a Golden Spike that they play for. Then you have Washington and Minnesota, the two most northern schools in the country, and they're playing for the Kings of the North. So there's a crown that they get to play for.
That's good.
Walking around with a golden crown. I mean, come on, that'd be sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, if Oklahoma and Texas are going to wear a dumb golden cowboy helmet, we can give Minnesota and Washington a golden crown.
And like and then, with the Game of Thrones thing, like King of the North.
King of the North. You got King it. Yep. North.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, that's good. And gold and both. Yeah. Perfect.
And then we got USC and Michigan State. They're going to play for the Trojan horse or something, the golden. The statue of what's her name from Troy.
Yeah.
So and we talked about maybe even making that one a sword. Like, could you imagine and swinging around a golden sword? I was like, that probably
their mascot does all the time.
Right. Yeah. But come on. You got ducks and bucks. Good. It's Nike. You've got Phil Knight of Oregon. You got Ohio State, who is the number one Nike producing school in all the country. Mm. It's got to be the loser takes off his kicks, walks to the middle of the field, hands them to the winning coach, who gets to bronze those babies and stick them in a trophy case. And could you imagine having Dan Lanning's shoes in a trophy case?
I love it.
Coached his shoes off. This has got to happen. The Nike
Bowl. It's really good. It's really
good. We got to make this happen, Adam. This is good.
I love, because can you imagine, you know, every once, I don't think it's like Ryan Day and Dan Lanning right now, but when coaches have real beefs against each other.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine if it was set up already as a tradition and then these two people that actually hate each other have to do it or don't do it and the whole crowd is just booing them because they're ruining the trip. Like, that is some pretty funny storylines. I do like that. And it makes sense. Oh, yeah, Nike. I love it.
Phil Knight can make that happen.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah, let's make the Nike Bowl. Like,
you can get you some gold shoes. Yeah. Phil Knight can get you some gold shoes.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think that would be great. But I love the fact that we're going to get to see these new West Coast schools and the traditional Big Ten schools clash. And it's not just in the Rose Bowl. It's going to be a weekly thing. I love it. I can't wait to see the clash of colors. I mean, like Oregon's green and yellow against Ohio State's scarlet and gray. It's going to look so beautiful on television.
From our perspective, like, you guys should thank the Lord that you never had to watch the Pac-12 network. Because it costs so much dang money to get. It was pretty poorly produced overall a lot of the times. And it just made it so I'm in Southern Oregon. It's Oregon and Oregon State are playing. I'm going to the sports bar. And they don't have the game because they don't pay for Pac-12. Now, it could be on Fox. You know, like, it's so much more likely. These four, like, Oregon doesn't have to be a top 25 team to possibly land on Fox. We're going to be on Fox, and people can actually watch us play. Like, it means a lot to a lot of these teams.
Fox, NBC, and CBS, all three, all day long, baby. And then, of course, you got the Big Ten Network, so, which is free. So people will have that one as well. So
what city, I should say, out of Columbus, instead of Columbus, you can't say that. What is your favorite Big Ten city to actually visit, have a good time?
Oh, man, that's a great question.
Like, not even necessarily, like, the game's going to be good. The football.
Piscataway, New Jersey is obviously.
Okay. I'd be pretty down. I've been thinking
It's the birthplace of college football, number one. So there's a lot of history there. You're really close to New York City if you want to go there. Jersey Shore.
You're probably winning if your team's playing there.
Yeah, you're probably. Yeah, yeah. I tell you, the most underrated is actually overrated. Sorry, is Maryland.
Interesting.
DC.
Yeah.
It's icky. Yeah, no, thank you. Most college town is got to be Penn State because there's nothing else there.
I've seen that. I found out because I was like, maybe I could go to Philly. And then I looked it on a map. I was like, oh, absolutely. Like, that is a way.
It is like I live in the middle of Ohio and that's the middle of Pennsylvania. And it is a 5.5-6 hour drive. Like, it's not easy to get to. There's no.
Yeah.
And then the hotels are an hour outside of the campus.
Really?
Like, oh, it is.
What are they doing?
I mean, unless you're going to stay on campus and pay an $800 a night hotel. Yeah. It's just terrible.
I would love to see – there's a couple, too, where I'm like, I'd love to see a game at Nebraska, but I want to get out of there immediately. Am I wrong, or is it a pretty fun college town?
I've not been to Lincoln. It's definitely – Iowa City's awful. I can't stand Iowa City.
Didn't even cross my mind to go there.
Bloomington's terrible, but if you get to go to the Big Ten Championship game, which we'll talk about next, Indianapolis is awesome.
Cool. Okay.
Indianapolis is the coolest city. Like, I love Columbus. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis is cooler.
Awesome. Good to know.
Yeah, and Indy's really
awesome. That'd be fun.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about that. So here's the deal. Let's close on this. Here is my prediction for the season. And I, even though a lot of people have been saying it, I don't want to say I was the originator of it because I think everybody kind of came to the conclusion at the same time when we all kind of looked at the schedules were released. There's a very real chance that, Adam, you and I are going to be doing not one, not two, but possibly three previews this year before the games. My prediction is that Ohio State loses in Eugene, Oregon.
Mm.
We get you back in Indianapolis.
Mm.
And then in the college football playoff, whether it's in the semis or the championship, it's going to be a winner takes all third time to go up against each other. Now, what do you think of those odds, Adam? What do you think of that? Like, that's how you – that is how rivalries are truly born right there.
And it's also, like, a new thing because, like, we were talking about this. That was, like, a way smaller possibility. But with, like, Oregon and Washington, where it was like, well, they literally look like they could be in the top four team. But it didn't happen. But the idea of playing a team three times in college football in a season is truly nuts. Like, that happened in, like, 1897 when there's only five teams on your schedule, or like,
you know, right,
five games, two teams. But yeah, that sounds amazing to me. I'm going full crazy optimist on my side that I'm like, oh yeah, we're winning every single game and we're winning a national championship. Do I believe it? It's like, I don't even know if we'll ever win one, tell you the truth. But I'm going full on there. That sounds as believable as anything, especially because it's like, yeah,
like, I really think it's possible because if you just look at the, you know, the experts, they've got Ohio State, Georgia, and Oregon as the best three rosters, right? Mm. You know, and some people think Alabama's might, you know, get in there. And of course, I really do believe, tell me if you think I'm wrong, I really do believe just like Georgia and Alabama are the cream of the crop and the SEC, and they have been and they will continue to be that, and more than likely. I think and true, every now and then an LSU jumps up and can steal something. I really do believe for about the next decade, if this continues to trend the way it is, it's Oregon and Ohio State is the Alabama and Georgia of the Big Ten. It's the way it's going to be. And
it certainly seems that way. Like, there's institutional things going on that lead you to – in like a competitive environment and like – acknowledgement of the NIL future that we're in that I think really set that. And I'll even go further. I was thinking, like, I think that either one of our – this is a possibility. Either one of our teams could possibly lose to the other one two times in a row and still set up a third time. Because if either of our team was like our only two losses, if it was Oregon even – our only loss is we lost to Ohio State in Eugene. We lost in the Big Ten Championship. And those are our only two losses, and those were close games. We're definitely making the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you make the playoffs, anything, we could just randomly meet. Like,
you're an 11-2
yeah,
second best team in a Power 2 conference.
Yeah.
You're in. Like,
and
it's guaranteed.
We lost by a field goal each time or something like that. You know, like, yeah, either of the teams would be in. And so it's pretty dang possible, which is crazy. Which
and
would mean
know,
what? We would then play in Columbus or something if that would, who knows?
No, it would be one of the bowls is what it would be.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The Rose Bowl. Imagine that. You know, they say the hardest thing in sports to do is beat a team three times.
Yeah, well, Washington literally has beaten us three times. It feels like the same three. I know it was two different rosters for those three.
Right.
But I swear it felt like we watched the three games, the exact same game, happen three times. Ugh. And each time we were like, well, it's hard to beat a team the second time. And then we're like, oh, dang. But yeah, no, it'd be crazy. And usually it's like we play Ohio State once every 10 years, it seems, you know, or like, or as a thing of the past. It's a truly bonkers idea to be like, we're going to play Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State regularly.
Oh,
like,
Penn
that
State
is pretty bonkers.
Penn State is so overrated, my man.
Oh yeah, I've been paying attention too. Where I'm like, well, you forced your name in there because of like a lucky season, basically.
Yeah. Well, I was just in Pennsylvania, and I swear I was 2 hours from Penn State. I swear to you, I saw more Ohio State gear on people than Penn State.
I mean,
like their fan base right now is just in that friend zone, like with James Franklin, like, yeah, we like him.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
It's
you know, like, 9-3 every year. Like,
it's hard to complain about 9-3, but like Ohio State's brand so big, I could tell you of like a bar that all you Ohio State fans could go to in Portland. Cause it's basically an Ohio State bar. Like it's a big one, you know? It's one of the hats I see more regular, like Oregon, Oregon State, and then probably like Ohio State could be number three.
We're everywhere, man. That's how it goes. Adam, tell everybody where they can find the Quack 12 podcast. We might have some Oregon fans watching this for the very first time and don't know who you are and really enjoyed that content. Where can they find you, my friend?
Well, first, if there are any Oregon fans, don't roast me for anything that I got wrong or whatever, because I don't care. Quack12podcast.com is our website where you can find every single week since the year 2017. That's right, the Willie Taggart era of the Oregon Duck football history. We have produced an episode every week since then. Even in the off season, often multiple ones. We have two different kinds of sides where it's like me and my co-host Aaron kind of go for like a Bill Walton take on sports commentary.
And you guys do that very well.
I might. I mean, very, yeah, it's, you know, we stay true to the weird Pac-12 After Dark kind of roots. That's yes. What we loved so much about it. And then we also have Hithloday, one of the greatest film reviewers online right now, putting in crazy amounts of work. We were lucky enough to convince you to come on the show and get your expertise and run through the entire roster.
We did.
Like literally the entire roster except for the kickers. Yeah. It was so nice to have you on there, like knowing. I mean, it's amazing all the Big Ten friends we've made in like 2 months too. Because yeah. All of a sudden we had to. So at Quack 12 Podcast on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. And then just follow us on whatever podcast app you got.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Adam. We will be seeing this gentleman's face again very, very soon as we get into the season. Thank you so much, Adam. I really do appreciate having you. Yes, and Phil Knight's bobblehead there. I'll make sure to have my Woody Hayes bobblehead with me.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. We'll
have Phil Knight and Woody Hayes shaking their heads back at each other. Who would have ever thought that this day would have come? But I'm glad it is, and I'm glad for our new brethren at the College Huddle. You can also find the Quack 12 podcast over at the College Huddle. Head on over to collegehuddle.com. There's the Adam, myself, and we just picked up USC. Woo! So we've got all four of them from out west now over at the College Huddle in the Big Ten. So looking forward to that. And then, Adam, we'll be seeing you very soon. Thank you so much, my friend.
I'll see you at the Nike Bowl.
There it is. We got to make it happen. All right. Thank you so much, Adam and the Quack 12 Podcast for coming on and helping us out with the preview of the Oregon team. So, Chris, let's go ahead and dive into the roster. Of course, Adam did a lot of talking about the roster, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But I will say this, Chris, as we've been doing our position group previews, it has become very evident. It is incredibly clear that there are two rosters in the Big Ten that are heads and shoulders above everybody else. One is Ohio State, two is Oregon, and there's no question about that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think the big question for Oregon, you know, and they've got some very highly touted quarterbacks in there. But you know what? I'm honestly not sold on either one of those guys. I know that's something you and I disagree on.
We do.
I think that, you know, Papa Smurf from Oklahoma just doesn't do it for me.
Man.
I do not think of Dillon Gabriel highly just because he really didn't play competition. And I know that they can say the same thing about Will Howard. And you know what? I can't argue it if they do. I don't believe that the Pac-12 or the Big 12, either one, you know, is known for their defense outside of maybe Oklahoma State and the Big 12. The Big 12. So, but yeah, I mean, these are stacked rosters. We've talked about it, Eric, in our position groups. Two tremendous guys at receiver.
Yes.
You know, they've got probably the best, if not the best, one of the best offensive lines in the game. Not just in the Big Ten, but in the game.
I think their offensive line's better on paper than Ohio State's. Now, it remains to be seen to see what kind of improvement Ohio State's line has made this offseason. And so I can hear the chat yelling at me already. Eric, you're not giving enough credit to the,
you know what?
The offensive line. But
these guys have shown it where Ohio State hasn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I agree. I don't disagree with you there. I'm interested to see what happens with the running backs, Eric.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the roster real fast. Because I think – you know, obviously James Jordan at running back, like you said, I'm super high on him. Don't sleep on Noah Whittington, they said. Of course, Dillon Gabriel, you talked about him, and is obviously his inability to grow another inch or two to make you happy. Dante Moore was the starting quarterback as a freshman last year at UCLA under Chip Kelly. He transfers to Oregon. They are going to use him. He's not going to just be sitting on the sideline being Dillon Gabriel's backup for the season in case of an injury. He will play. Terrence Ferguson is a very good tight end.
I really like Ferguson.
You have at wide receiver Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson. I think probably if you're looking at upperclassmen, the best 1-2 punch at wide receiver in the Big Ten, if you're looking at upperclassmen. I still believe Ohio State's depth at wide receiver is better, but it's also unproven. However, the track record says there will be a sophomore who will absolutely explode on the scene.
Are you going to make me go off on a Jeremiah Smith tangent again?
I will not. However, okay. That remains to be seen as well. And then look at this offensive line. Josh yes. Connerly Jr., Marcus Harper, and I can't say the center's name, but he's a real good one. Matthew Bedford transfers in, and then I think what might be the best, one of, if not the best offensive lineman in the Big Ten, in a Johnny Cornelius. So
yeah,
this is a loaded offense. I don't know that they're as deep as Ohio State, but I definitely think pound for pound, Chris, the Oregon offense absolutely is going to be able to play with the big boys.
Well, I'll tell you, this is the thing I will say, Eric. I think Oregon gets lucky in a sense because this is not a deep Oregon team. And the fact that they get Ohio State before the midpoint of the season is advantage Oregon. Getting them at home before the midpoint of the season when you've played that physical Big Ten schedule and been beat up is going to be advantage Oregon. If Ohio State's going to win that game, which I believe they will, they're going to go out there and they're going to earn it. Because Oregon should be firing on all cylinders by that time offensively. Now, saying that, I will say I'm not as sold on the Ducks defensively.
Okay. That being said then, Chris, let's take a look at the Ducks defense. If I can get it to pull up here real fast. There we go. So, taking a look at that defense, let's start up front on the defensive line. You got Jordan Birch, Jamari Caldwell transfers in. You got Keon Ware-Hudson and Mateo Ugalele, I think. solid. I will call that solid. Linebackers, Justin Jacobs, Jeffrey Bossa. He is a stud, by the way.
Jeffrey Bossa is a machine. Yeah.
Amarion Winston. And then looking at the defensive backfields, you got at cornerback Jabber Muhammad, again, stud. Brandon Johnson at safety position. You've got Karn Alexander, Kobe Savage, and your guy, Tysheen
Johnson. Yeah, I do like Tysheen Johnson a lot. Here's the thing, Eric. Even worse than the offense when it comes to depth on this side of the ball, though.
I agree with that. And then here's the other thing that Adam made perfectly clear. There is a weakness on this team, and it's in the defensive backfield.
Yes.
So, that being said, if the offensive line can give Will Howard or whoever's at quarterback time to throw the football, and we have a couple wide receivers step into those 2 and 3 positions – and create really bad mismatches for them, Ohio State is going to be able to score on the Ducks.
Yes.
So, are we ready to take a look at their schedule?
Let's do it.
All right. Now, before I throw this up on the screen, I want everybody to know I'm a man of my word. That's why
you did it, didn't you, Eric? I'm very disappointed in you, Eric.
Actually, did I do the wrong one? I did. I gave it to you.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. No, I didn't. I didn't. I did it correct. Okay. So, Idaho, Boise, Oregon State. Those should be three wins. Although, Boise is not the same Boise Chris that they used to be.
They're not. So, not since, oh, boy, the coach that he left to go to Florida.
Patterson or?
No.
I know who you're talking about.
He left and went Dan.
I can't remember. I don't remember.
I can't remember the last name.
Anyway.
It escapes me. But, yeah, not the same Boise team.
Yeah.
Although they do have a cool field.
Yes, they do. At UCLA, shouldn't be a problem.
No.
Michigan State at home, shouldn't be a problem. Ohio State at home, that's the big one. And then here's what's interesting. Don't sleep on a Friday night visit out to West Lafayette and the Purdue Boilermakers. They can get you. Especially
Purdue's got us at night, Eric.
Especially if you beat Ohio State and you're riding coming off super that high. High, coming off this high.
Going to a short week.
Night. Uh-huh.
Long travel cross country.
Yep. Illinois shouldn't be a problem. The trip to Ann Arbor will be interesting. Maryland shouldn't be a problem. The trip to Wisconsin could be interesting.
I'd like to see Wisconsin have that as a night game.
And then Washington at home to finish off the season. Of course, they will want to definitely get that Husky off their back. Chris, you said 11-1, 8-1 the Big Ten. JR agreed with you. I'm assuming you have that one loss on October 12th at home against the Buckeyes.
That's correct.
As you can see, Chris, I'm saying the Ducks are going to go 12-0, 9-0 in the regular season, and their inaugural season in the Big Ten. Now, there's a caveat to this. I've been saying this since the end of last season. I believe Ohio State and Oregon are going to play not once, not twice, but three times this season. And the way I look at it is if we're going to lose at them, if we're going to lose to them, I want to lose the first one. Because I definitely don't want to lose the last two, which will have rings on the line for a Big Ten championship and maybe even a college football national championship.
Well, and I'll tell you, Eric, if they were to lose one, you're right. It's best to lose that first one. And how interesting would it be if, and we've talked about it before, if Ohio State does not get to play them in the
Big Ten championship game,
but only has that one loss. And let's say Notre Dame also sitting on a loss. Who's going to get that number five seed?
Oh, it's going to – it's who.
You have to think it's going to be Ohio State.
I would think it would be Ohio State, especially if Oregon –
the strength of schedule.
Been Big Ten and goes 12-0, 13-0, where if Notre Dame's got one loss, it's probably to Florida State. Maybe Texas A&M. So it's probably a worse loss.
Possibly SC.
No, Notre Dame's gonna wipe the field with USC. At the end of the year, USC's gonna be tired. They're gonna be beat up from playing the first year in the Big Ten. And Notre Dame's gonna come in there and probably with an opportunity to bolster where they land in the college football playoff. So.
But Eric, at the same time, this is a Notre Dame team that we have seen since Brian Kelly was there and with Marcus Freeman that have lost some games that they should not lose.
True.
I mean, all I'm going to say is Marshall.
Yeah. Who was on our schedule this year, by the way.
Yes.
I hope you've enjoyed this preview, everybody. We've had a lot of fun putting these together. Please like, share, subscribe. It really does help our channel. If you're an Oregon fan and you found this preview, we hope that you enjoyed it. Let us know in the comments. Do you think we're crazy? Do you think we're spot on? We'd like to know what you think. And by all means, please give the Quack 12 podcast, our sister podcast from the College Huddle, a watch, listen, follow. They have a great website, by the way, as well. So go check out their website. And go check out our website, theohiopodcast.com. By the way, this video will be turned into an article, and we'll have an Oregon preview, as well as an Oregon preview in our magazine that is going to be coming right around the corner that Chris and I have been working on, a 2024 season preview for the Buckeyes, a magazine from the OHL podcast. All right, Chris, till next time. OH.
IO.
Go Bucks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.